And thank you all for being here this morning. I only noticed a few adults sneaking out with the children, so I'm glad you stayed. I told you last night that you come to know a little bit about me as the week went along and I introduced my family to you. Last night, I wanted to let you know right up front that among my most formative influences when I was growing up was Scooby-Doo, the Three Stooges, and Gilligan's Island. well, and of course, my parents and Jesus. Gilligan's Island, it seemed fitting, you know, with the whole idea of being rescued from shipwreck, to tell you about one of my favorite episodes from Gilligan's Island. If you never saw it, it's the story of these, you know, these people who go to take a charter boat and they get shipwrecked out on an island and they keep trying to be rescued and they keep running into all of these calamities. Well, there's this one time where the professor, one of the people shipwrecked, has a pole stuck out in the surf because he's measuring, you know, the tides and the rising waters and things like that. And all of a sudden one day he begins to notice that the waters are rising incredibly fast. And so he comes and he alerts all of the men and they try to keep the news from the women on the island because they don't want them to panic, but they realize that they've got to go to the highest point of the island. And the next day they notice that the waters have risen even faster. And so they think that, you know, in just a matter of days, they're going to be completely engulfed in water. The whole island is going to be drowned by whatever's happening in the world around. And so they are making plans to build up something on the highest hill to try to save themselves as best they can. Until they realize that Gilligan, who has been on the island there, he's kind of the one who gets in the most trouble. Gilligan has been using this pole to catch lobsters with. And in order to catch bigger lobsters, he's been moving the pole out deeper and deeper into the surf. And so it looks like the waters are rising and he's just moving. And what you find is that on this show, constantly, these guys are their own worst enemies. Even when they have the chance of being rescued, they don't get rescued because they botch something up. And in this case, when they think the entire world is, you know, the waters around them are about to rise and completely drown them, they realize it's not the world around them, it's them that are the problem. I say that because I think it's a great analogy to the text that we're going to be reading this morning. Mark chapter 7, if you have a Bible. Would you open up with me there? Mark chapter 7. And I'll be reading from verses 14 to 23. The message that I've simply entitled, "What's Wrong with the World?" Let me step back just a bit for those of you who are on my left. Mark chapter 7, verses 14 to 23. "What's wrong with the world?" And Jesus called the people to him again and he said, "Hear me, all of you, and understand, there is nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him, but the things that come out of a person are what defile him. And when he had entered the house and left the people, his disciples asked him about the parable. And he said to them, 'Then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his stomach, his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled?' And thus he declared all foods clean. And he said, 'What comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person.'" What's wrong with the world? As we look at this text, I want us first of all to notice the four, I call them the four audiences of this text, these things that Jesus is teaching here. There are four audiences, and the first you see in verse 14 is simply the crowd. "And he called the people to him again, and he said to them, 'Hear me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside of a person that by going into him can defile him, but the things that come out of a person are what defile him.'" If you notice, maybe in your Bible, it depends on which translation you're using, the verses go, verses 14, 15, 17, 18, 19, and I'm an English major, but I can count, and I notice that there's no verse 16 in my Bible. There are some manuscript traditions that actually have It's probably in a footnote if you don't have a verse 16. A verse 16 in there that says, if anyone has ears to hear, then let him hear. Do you see how Jesus frames what he's about to say? He says he calls all the people to him and he says, hear me, all of you, and understand. Certain traditions in the manuscripts even have him saying, if anyone has ears to hear, then let him hear what I am saying. Jesus is urging the crowd to hear and understand what he is about to teach them, because he knows that they have not been hearing this message clearly. Now, if you look in the context in which Jesus is teaching the crowd about the nature of defilement, you understand that there's another audience involved, the Pharisees, who believe that defilement came in from the unclean outside world. Now, you see that very clearly if you read the whole context of chapter 7, where the Pharisees had come around Jesus. They had noticed that his disciples were eating without having washed their hands before they ate. And so they criticized Jesus and his disciples for eating with hands that were unwashed. And Mark says it this way in verse 3 of chapter 7, for the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands, holding to the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other traditions that they observe, such as the washing of cups and pots and copper vessels and dining couches. And so the Pharisees gather around Jesus and they say, your disciples are not washing. They're not holding to the traditions of the elders, washing before they eat. Now, there was a long body of tradition that we now know alternately maybe as the oral law that's been included in a volume called the Mishnah, which probably very few of you, if any of you, have ever read before. But there was a tradition, a belief among Jewish people, contemporary in Jesus' time and even today, who hold that when God revealed to Moses on Mount Sinai the law that we know in the Old Testament, the written law, he also revealed a complementary body of law known as the oral law that was handed down, not in written form as it was in, as the Old Testament was, but in oral form, handed down from Moses to Joshua, and from Joshua to the elders, and from the elders to the prophets, and then handed down from the prophets to the men of the great assembly. And the men of the great assembly said three things. They said, be cautious in judgment, raise up many disciples, and build a fence around the Torah, or the law, the written law. Now, I just quoted to you from the Mishnah, from the Ethics of the Fathers, chapter 1, verse 1. It's the idea that there was an oral law that God had given to Moses. Now, just so that you understand, I don't hold to this. I don't believe that this is true. But this is the framework in which these Pharisees approached Jesus. They said, your disciples are breaking the tradition of the elders. Because in the oral law, there was an entire body of teaching about how a person must ceremonially wash and from what things a person might become unclean in order that he would need to ceremonially wash so that he could be pure in order to enter the temple. In fact, 1/6 at least of the oral law is about ceremonial washing. It was a huge part of the religious tradition in Jesus' day. And so when these Pharisees, these religious leaders, came around Jesus, they said, your disciples are eating with unwashed hands. They're bringing into themselves uncleanness from the world around that will separate them from a holy God. And Jesus, after meeting this challenge from the Pharisees quite severely in some ways, I'll leave you to read that, but challenging them because of the hypocrisy of always only attending to the outside, the religious appearances, and challenging them that not only have they failed to observe the commandments of God, but that in preference for their own religious traditions, they've actually kept people from observing the commandments of God. After having rebuked them, he calls the people to himself, verse 14, and he says to them, hear me, all of you, and understand what I'm about to teach. If you have ears to hear, then listen to what I'm about to say, because it is not the message that you've been hearing from your religious leaders. And then there are the disciples. And I love these guys, by the way. The disciples in verse 17. And when Jesus had entered the house and left the people, his disciples asked him about the parable. And he said to them, "Then are you also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart, but is in his to his stomach and then is expelled?" I love these guys because they ask when they don't understand. And by the way, I will say that for my part, I consider stories like this, little episodes like this, to be a great signal of the authority and the reliability of the Bible itself. Because the Bible was written down by these guys who record for our benefit all of their foibles. They were not trying to elevate themselves. They were trying to tell the truth, even when it implicated them in all of their ignorance. They did not understand what Jesus was getting at, because they probably, because they had been so indoctrinated into this view that uncleanness derives from the world around. And so they come to Jesus and they say, "We don't understand what you mean when you say that there's nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him. Surely all of these unclean things around can make us unclean." And Jesus says, "Then are you also without understanding?" You know why else I appreciate the fact that they asked this question of Jesus? Because I don't know if I would have gotten it. I really don't. I mean, if I had just been left with Jesus' statement in Mark 7, 14 and 15, I don't even know that I would have gotten this. And so I appreciate the fact that they had the humility and the courage to admit that they did not understand. And Jesus, after saying, "Then do you not also understand? Are you also without understanding?" He goes on to explain to them and to us the nature of defilement. Because you see, we are the other audience for this text, for this interaction. It was recorded not for the benefit of those who had already learned from it, but this was recorded in the Gospel of Mark for the benefit of us who want to know the truth, who seek to learn from our Master what we need to know about the life that we live. And we, just like the Pharisees and the disciples and the crowd, have a tendency to see the problems of the world in the world around us, not with us. I mean, because we're not in the same culture. We don't hear the same message derived from the same traditions as the Pharisees and the people of that day. But we have our own traditions and we have our own culture and our own worldview that will assure us in many ways that the problem is with the Republicans or the Democrats or, you know, someone else. There's always someone else around us who is wrong with the world. Very seldom do we see ourselves. I mean, I don't know if you parents know what I'm talking about, but I don't have a problem with patience as long as my children are being fine and making good choices and not violating my personal space when they're not supposed to. Otherwise, I'm a very patient person. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with coveting. It's just that my neighbors keep buying all of this stuff, and if they would stop, I would not have a problem with coveting. You know what I mean? It's like, consider this. Think of it this way. If there were a series of bank robberies happening in your town, and the police go back and they begin to study all of the video surveillance cameras in this bank, and there is one particular person who happens to be on the surveillance camera on the day of each of these different bank robberies, they would probably clue into the fact that this person has something to do with the bank robberies. I am curiously on the surveillance camera of all of the sin that I feel convicted about. I'm there, right in the center of the impatience or the greed or the coveting or the lust or whatever it may be. I am there, but I think most of us want to shift responsibility onto the shoulders of someone else around me in this world. And so Jesus' teaching comes very close to the heart when he says there's nothing outside of a person that will defile him. It's what's inside. Jesus gets right to the heart of defilement. Verse 20, and he said, "What comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. You see, the uncleanness of the outside world does not enter into the heart. Jesus actually says all of these things from outside, again, speaking to the people in his day, all of these things from the outside, all this food you bought in the marketplace that you think might be unclean, all of those things come in from the outside and they pass from the inside to the outside. Literally, he says these things go into the stomach and then they're expelled into the outhouse or into the latrine. He's saying those things don't make a person unclean. The things that defile a person are the things that come from within, that is, from the heart. You see, the heart of man is the source of defilement in the world. All of these evil things, in the words of Jesus, come from within. Now, I read for you this list in verse 21. Twice now, I read it, all of those words. And if you're like me, maybe you have a tendency when you come to a list of words like that, especially words that you don't particularly like because they talk about sin, we have a tendency to read them like this. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, slide, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and they defile a person. You know what I mean? They kind of become a blur. They become a blah, blah, blah to us as we're reading quietly. So as I was preparing this message, and I was looking at this, and I was going, all of these evil things, blah, 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 blah. The Lord sort of had me stop. And so I stopped, and I started looking at this and evaluating myself against these evil things that Jesus say come from within. And if you can make 100, you know, on a test in school, I made about a 20 on this test.